Good morning, everyone. Let's take our Bibles now and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Have you ever been so busy that you lost sight of what it was that you were doing or what you were supposed to be thinking or what was supposed to be important? I find that it is really, really easy to be so engaged and so involved with the day-to-day affairs, just work, that we sometimes do lose sight of what's really important. Just this past Friday night, Malene and I were able to go to a party of one of our friends' birthday party who's celebrating a big milestone in her life, big birth date for her. You know, it was one of the big ones. And we had gathered together for a surprise party, and it was a wonderful, sweet time. Her family had flown in from across the country, and we were gathered there just certainly good to see some old friends and to have some time together at a party. And as we're leaving the party, which was festive and fun, Melina said something to me that really caught me off guard and I hadn't really thought about it. See, our friend has a surgery coming up, and it's a very significant surgery. They're going to do a bypass on her brain to help repair some of the problems that a condition she has is going. And Melina said, do you think that the circumstance that she's going through, that the surgery she was facing, that was on her mind? And I said, well, I didn't even give it much thought. As a matter of fact, I had forgotten about that because I got lost in all of the festivities and in all of the fun that we were having. I didn't even think about it. And she said, well, I couldn't help but stop thinking about it. It was just on my mind that here's my friend and that she's going to the surgery and just what will happen in the surgery. And from that moment on, that's what I thought about. It was just the way she brought it up and just what caused me to think about this circumstance the thought that what will happen to our friend? Will she be changed? Will she be different? Will she survive? This is pretty serious when you're talking about brain surgery. And it was so easy to move from a place of I was distracted with the party to being somewhat overwhelmed with the thought of the gravity of what she was up against. Solomon is going to address for us this morning in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 a really big point about how you and I spend our time and what we spend our attention and our focus doing in this life under the sun. This morning, the message is entitled, Much Work to Do. As we've been looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 3 over the last few weeks, we have been exploring the worldview that we embrace. And the purpose of looking at Solomon's reasonings, Solomon's deductions and his observations is that we are able to take apart our worldview and put it back to where we can see life with a healthy perspective. It helps us take away those areas or those issues that sometimes cloud the way we see our circumstances. Solomon is going to help us discover a meaning in our life, a real purpose in our life. And he's going to answer that big question for us, that life does have meaning and life does have a purpose. But the depths that he goes through as he is working to that answer, it sometimes can become very heavy and it can be very, very distressing when you consider the subject matter that he's talking about. And here we are at this time of year where you'd think, well, this doesn't really seem like a really good Christmas message. How in the world are we supposed to be happy and festive when Solomon just keeps bringing up all of these difficult and weighty issues? The truth is this. As child of God, you and I are able to handle the circumstances, the good times and the bad times in our life. And with a healthy perspective, we are able to navigate this life and live a joyful life because we have an understanding about what we can control and what we can't control. And it helps us establish a healthy perspective in our life and gives us fulfilling joy right now in this moment. The struggle, though, that we have is that our day-to-day present lives really do toss us to and fro, driving us from moment to moment with very little time for reflection. That's what Sunday mornings are for us as Christians, where we come to the house of God and we spend some time worshiping Him. We worship Him with our time. Just coming is an act of worship in and of itself, because it is the declaration that, Lord, my time belongs to You. So in our time this morning, we're going to do some reflection about the really big issue that the pulls and the distraction that life has. It certainly does have a problem that we all realize, that our lives are filled with so many struggles because we're pulled in so many different directions. And if we're going to answer the question this morning about our work, I think it's important for us to realize the struggles and the pulls and the weights that work has on us, because sometimes it just gets us too busy to focus and reflect on what really is important. And work does affect our money. If we don't work, we don't have money. And sometimes those worries certainly do weigh us down. Or maybe family issues, or maybe even our health itself, cause us to lose sight and be distracted. And we fail to see, moment by moment, happiness, joy, and realize our satisfaction in this life. Solomon's conclusion is that there is a greater purpose in this life than simply just living under the sun. That's a phrase that he uses over and over and over. And it is understanding that perspective that really does inform the way we read Ecclesiastes. If you and I read Ecclesiastes from just the perspective, just the full-on face value perspective, we see that it seems to be so futile, so vain, so empty, the conclusions that Solomon arrives at week after week after week, if we are looking at life just from our earth-filled perspective. Solomon sees it, and he points it out for us. But as a child of God, we understand that there is so much more to our purpose and to our being than simply living here under the sun. It's not about that we're born and that we die, and everything else that happens in between is of no consequence. You and I have and understand a greater purpose that we have in our life because we have Jesus Christ in our life. And His redemption of us as sinners turned saints certainly does give us some great comfort, some great encouragement, knowing in the good times and the bad times that life here under the sun can be hard, but you and I can find our happiness and our contentment in appreciating all that God has given us. That's the big point of the series, that a hope-filled life purposely and intentionally thrives in surrender under Jesus the Son. For today's message, we're going to take this focus. My work finds recovered focus when I know my efforts serve God's greater purpose. And so this morning, as we work through Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 9 through 22, we're going to find satisfaction in our work, security in God's sovereignty, and that's going to bring our focus restored. Let's go ahead now and look at our Bibles. Let's read Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 9 through 13, as we look for finding satisfaction in our work. Read along with me. Solomon writes, "What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. And also that every man should eat and drink and should enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God." Let's go to the Lord in prayer this morning, shall we? Lord, as we come together in Your name, I pray that Your Holy Spirit would speak to our hearts and give us encouragement and give us clarity and help refocus our perspective. Lord, helping us to navigate the distractions that we have in this life. And Lord, I pray this morning that You would retune and redefine our work and reclaim it for Your glory. if we have failed to give it to you in a proper, in a healthy, worshipful, and let it be consecrated only, Lord, for thee. We ask these things in your name. Amen. That big question that Solomon asks there in verse 9. What profit hath he that worketh and that wherein he laboreth? Here it sounds like Solomon is going back and bringing up the pointlessness of work. What's the point of working if, and you understand it from a very self-serving, a very secular mindset, if all of our life is defined by we're born and we die and what happens in the middle is of no consequence, that's a pretty grim outlook. But Solomon is, he's giving us some encouragement to let us know that our work does have important value, but we need to be careful because our work may not give us the value or the security that you are looking for unless we realize with a healthy perspective what our work does accomplish. Solomon isn't making a point or making a statement that work is pointless. If you've ever tried to train someone to do a new job, they will often very quickly ask you from the very beginning, especially the mindset today, well, what's the point in doing that? You get paid when you do that. That's the point right here. Please finish the task. But he's not making a statement about the pointlessness of work when he asks, what profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? No, it's that work does certainly keep us busy. But the question of the moment right now is, can our work give us fulfilling, lasting, enduring satisfaction? Is the work that you do day by day, is that enough to give you fulfilling satisfaction? I mentioned last week the Moravians and how they came here to the United States. There's a settlement not too far from here. Beautiful place to go right now and see the village decorated with all the Christmas decorations. They came with the spirit of, as missionaries, they were going to come and they lived together and everyone worked together and everyone had a very simple task that they accomplished for the benefit of the community. The bakers, the artisans, every aspect of life, someone contributed to that. And the community was very self-sustaining in the way that it worked, with the idea that we go out from here and we share the gospel with Jesus and we live right here simply and satisfyingly serving Jesus day in and day out. What a beautiful story the Moravians have. The problem with the story of the Moravians is it seems like it's so outdated and so long ago. Because when you go to the village, they don't walk around in clothes like we wear today. And yes, there are electric lights and there's some amenities that we experience today, indoor plumbing and some great benefits inside that village that when you go to, you realize that there's been an impact of modern life. But for the most part, it would be very primitive by our standards. And I understand for each and every one of us, while you may have grown up without indoor plumbing in the house, or you may have grown up without central heating in your house, there are children today that do not know the world any different. And that to ask them to even go outside and sleep in a tent, and I'm one of those, I say, what's the purpose of going out camping, Brother Jack, when God created heaters inside our house and light switches and televisions to entertain us? Why in the world would we want to necessarily go out and struggle with the hardship of nature? And Brother Jack says, if you've got to answer that question, then you certainly don't get it. But can our work really give us a fulfilling satisfaction? Can the work itself be satisfying? I think the problem that we face with work, from looking at what Solomon has written about here, is that we really do struggle with this big question of legacy. Is the task that I'm doing, is the efforts that I make, are they going to have a lasting impact long after I'm gone? Legacy. You understand about that. Is all the work that I've done, is it going to be for naught? Or is it going to go on a lot further than myself? I was at Monticello yesterday. Melina and her family were able to go up and spend some time up there as we were looking and thought that we'd see some great Christmas decorations up at Monticello. You know what? They don't put them out at Monticello this time of year. There was a wreath on the door, and that was about it. And as we were listening to Thomas Jefferson's legacy, he wanted to be known for some of his accomplishments, you know, that he wrote the Declaration of Independence, that he had helped establish, or that he wrote the statute for religious liberties in Virginia, and that he was also the president or the founder of the University of Virginia system. And we think about Thomas Jefferson, who's had a lasting legacy here in these United States, and to stand in his house, and I look at his house, and I've been there several times. This time I was taken back at the perspective of the tour, because the tour guide seemed to point out all of Thomas Jefferson's failures, all that he didn't accomplish, and how he would defer in some of the big issues of, as a plantation owner, he had slaves, and that he didn't do anything about it when he had the power to do something about it. And it was really was at his house. Because the first time I remember going, seeing his house, and I remember being so impressed by how they presented him as this forward thinker, this self-taught man who was able to teach himself how to design his beautiful home, how he laid out the buildings at the University of Virginia as he was there in Charlottesville, how he was a self-taught man, very brilliant, very gifted, great mind, great thinker. This last time they pointed out his failures and his inadequacies. Walking through the house, I couldn't help but notice how the house itself had cracks on the walls and that the paint was peeling in some areas and the floorboards creaked. And I realized that there's a lot I have in common with Thomas Jefferson. My house has cracks in the walls, the paint's peeling, and the floor's cracked when I walk across it. Thomas Jefferson had a legacy. Am I okay if I'm never going to be a Thomas Jefferson? Are you okay if you're never going to be someone who leaves a lasting legacy? I think the problem with legacy is that we define it from our earthly perspective. We gain it, we look at it, and we realize that our life and the accomplishments that we want people to recognize us for, we are basing those upon a ground view perspective. When I look around here and think about the history of our county, how all the great textile mills that came through, and many of you spent your working years in textile mills, and to go around and see some of the paintings in the hospital of some important figures in our community and seeing the legacies that they left, and I think to myself, is that the type of legacy I'm going to leave? And realistically, I know that there's probably never going to be a hospital built in my name. But is that my pursuit? And should that be my purpose and my passion? The problem that we have with legacy is that every task we attempt does have value for us, and it does have some impact on our life and in the generations to come. But every task that you and I do does have value. Whether it leaves that legacy, we don't need to trouble ourselves with that right now. We need to focus on the value of what the task is at hand. It has a point and a purpose for us. There is both something that we can learn from the good and the bad in our life. And that wherever our station is and whatever task we do, whether how good it is or how difficult it is, there is a learned lesson that you and I can receive from our work. Solomon tells us he hath made everything beautiful in his time. That means for the difficult moments, for the good moments, from God's perspective. So right now, as your mind drifts back over those really difficult and lonely seeming moments of your life, please know this. There's value in those moments, It will have led you to a place of despair. There's no one that cares. There's no one that worries. But God does. Or maybe it leads you to that place where you realize, look at all that I have. And from the good hand of God, all that He's blessed me with. That's the amazing thing about perspective. We either see the injustices against ourselves, or we see the tremendous blessings. And that's the problem we have with these old eyes of ours. Sometimes we can't see the beauty in the bad, but only in the good. No, the bigger question that we have right here is this, in terms of legacy. Am I satisfied with knowing I'll never know the full impact of my efforts? All the hard work that you put in with your family, all of the hard work that you put in at the factory, all of the hard work that you've put in your neighborhood, in your community, are you satisfied knowing that you may never, ever know all, and that someone else may never, ever know all that you've done? See, that's what legacy is about. It's how do people see me? How do people see what I've done? Do people really know and see and appreciate what I have done? That's a big question about work, because it speaks to our motivations for doing the work that we're doing. I didn't get a paycheck for this, but I certainly would love to have someone tell me thank you and you appreciated what you're doing. And you know what? As someone who works with other people, I certainly do see the value in that. But if you never, ever get a thank you for what you've done, would you be satisfied with the work and the job that you've done, even if you get no recognition for that work? But remember, Solomon has helped us. He's already answered the question. If you're trying to find your hope and your purpose for being in work, you are never, ever going to find your lasting satisfaction. He said, everything is vanity. Everything is empty. You're not going to find lasting satisfaction, fulfilling satisfaction in what you do. But it does not remove the value that we get from working. Solomon tells us in verse 12, I know that there is no good in them. And he says, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. So this morning, as we bring this thought to a close, please don't confuse happiness with lasting satisfaction. See, happiness is it's an emotional state that we get to. We can be happy, we can be content with what we're doing, even if we don't have lasting satisfaction in what we're doing. You find this in just a few moments when you leave here and go and eat. You can be happy with the meal that you have. Not a happy meal, but you can be happy with the meal that you eat, but it's not going to last. Because you know tonight, after the evening service, you're going to have to eat again. That's when you get the happy meal, Miss Carolyn, right? So you go and you have to eat again. The problem with food is it doesn't give us lasting satisfaction, because there's not a meal that you eat that's going to last you for the rest of your life. Physically, we understand one meal can't sustain us. So if you're thinking about life in terms of lasting satisfaction, our work is not going to give us that lasting fulfillment. Because there comes a day when we stop working. Not that we should ever stop serving God, but sometimes our task is done, and it's time to move on to the next task. That doesn't mean that we can't find happiness in our tasks. Because contentment, really, is a simple life, and seeing that simple life as a gift from God. Being content with what God has given. And the hard part about this, contentment, is it's really easy to be satisfied and to be contented when life is good and life is well. When your refrigerator is stocked full of food for the winter, or your power is on, and you have running water inside the house, it's very easy to be contented with what you have. But take away any of those, do you find yourself equally contented? I know the way I'm wired. I certainly do get bent out of shape when one thing doesn't fit into my perfectly crafted plan for my day by day. And it's really easy for contentment to evaporate and to blow away. But it's learning to take the time to find our contentment and our satisfaction and see it as this life, this work that God has given us, as a gift from Him. And greater the challenge than finding our contentment is taking that work and giving it back to God. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31, "Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God." So I hope this morning, as we've looked at a theology of our work, please know that our work does keep us busy, but it can give us contentment, happiness. It may not give us lasting satisfaction, something that we've done the task and there's never ever going to need to be any other work that we're ever going to need to do. But you and I can find happiness in the moment. And it all is a matter of perspective. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 14 through 21, Solomon's going to present to us the importance of learning to see God's sovereignty. In verse 14 through 20, Solomon writes, "I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before Him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been, as God requireth that which is past. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of iniquity, righteousness, that iniquity was there. And I said in mine heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every purpose and for every work. I said in my heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, that they might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Every one thing that befalleth them, as one dieth, so dieth another. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place, and all are of dust, and turn to dust again." And you say, there he goes. Solomon's taking the depressing talk, talking about our ends. Understanding, though, what he's saying here, the commentary, the statement, the message that he shares with us about the sovereignty of God. Last week, we introduced this in the chapter, verses 1 through 8. But this morning, we're going to look at it playing out and seeing some of the ramifications that Solomon connects with that. Sovereignty, quite simply, means God's complete reign over the universe. It's a word that, when we think about it, can give us great comfort, or it can cause us some great consternation. Solomon writes in verse 14, "I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it, and God doeth it that men should fear before Him." God's sovereignty, that He's over the affairs of men. It's important to stop and to reflect on what His sovereignty means for me. And we see His sovereignty playing out through His hand of providence. Another concept that we looked at last week. How God accomplishes His will at the right time that He deems right. How God works His sovereignty, His providing. The problem that we have, though, concerning His sovereignty, there's a lot of questions that rise up when you start to handle this question of sovereignty. If God's really in control of everything, then why in the world is this world so messed up? How could a perfect God create such an imperfect world? You know the answer to that one? How in the world could a good and a righteous God allow suffering and injustice in this world? Two of the really big questions that the world is asking right now. And God's sovereignty is questioned because of the existence of wickedness, sin. God's sovereignty is questioned because of injustice, suffering that takes place in this world. And when you're talking about sovereignty, very quickly, it breaks down into a concept known as fatalism. That God has determined everything. That God is responsible for the good, creating the good, and that he wrote this plan out, and we are just automatons that are just working out his plan, which makes God the author of sin, and God responsible for our sin. And it begins to question his character, and it begins to question his authority. How could a good God, how could a loving God do this, bring sin into this world, and then require judgment for that sin? And the concept of fatalism is God's sovereignty askew and out of perspective, and it's wrong. When we come to his sovereignty, we need to understand that God's will is ultimately accomplished in his time as he permits. That there is sin in this world is the result of Adam and Eve's disobedience. And when you look at God's response to sin, how he sent his only begotten Son to the world, that whosoever believed in him should not perish but have everlasting life, we find God has provided an answer. And I'm so grateful this morning that someone shared that hope with me, because I serve him now. And I see that my life isn't my own, that it belongs to him. But it is entirely possible to live on this planet and never ever give a thought to the fact that this world belongs to God. There are lots of people that do this day in and day out with no realization that God is sovereignly in control and that he accomplishes his will as he permits, as he allows. That there is sin in this world is not because God is guilty of sin, but that God permitted that sin. Does it make him responsible? That's responsibility is all on me. It's all on you. It's all on us as human beings. You see, God's sovereignty for us provides, as believers, great security in knowing that he alone is good and that he is able to accomplish his will. When we talk in terms of sovereignty, it's not something that causes us to sit down, stop working and saying, you know what, God's going to take care of this. We'll just stop and we'll just see where it goes. But for us as believers, it's that perspective that his sovereignty gives us that encouragement, that security. He is good and he is going to accomplish his will. But in terms of justice and injustice, our problem with injustice arises when we view the circumstance from our own perspective, when we see suffering in this world. And you know what? I see it everywhere, that there is hurting, that we're taking up Christmas gifts for the Tabernacle Children's Home in Greenville, South Carolina, because this home takes in children who don't have a loving mother or father, who've turned them over to the program for a time, or because they have no family. I see in these pitiful orphans great injustice, because no child should ever have to go through life like that, not knowing the love of mother and dad. And it breaks my heart to hear that. And in some small way, we're doing something about that by giving them a small gift to let them know that, hey, we love you. Jesus loves you. But the problem with injustice is that we are looking at the circumstance from our own perspective. We view the oppression as an assault on ourselves. We think about it in terms of us. Oppression, injustice. What does that mean to me? What does that mean for me? We live in the land of the free and the home of the brave, and our religious freedoms are sometimes infringed upon in small ways, but certainly not to the degree that so many other Christians around the globe, outside of our country, face the persecution and the suffering and the injustice harbored upon them just because they identify with the name of Jesus. But when someone inconveniences us, we see that oppression as an assault on ourselves. But understanding in its proper place, injustice is assault of wickedness against God's justice and righteousness. Remember, he's in charge. He's sovereign. And that suffering that takes place in this world because of wickedness, because of a wicked person oppresses a righteous person, isn't because of that person's being righteous, but it's an assault on the name of God. It's someone thinking that, you know what, God, you think you're in control, I'll show you. And it's what Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 16 says. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. Wait a minute. Wicked people oppress wicked people, and wicked people oppress righteous people. And sometimes it seems to be that righteous people oppress righteous people. This is the problem with sin in this world. And God's sovereignty reminds us that we don't control our circumstance. And for us, that can sometimes be unsettling. In Ecclesiastes 3:19, Solomon reminds us, yea, they all have one breath, so that man hath no preeminence above the beast. That section that he writes there about the wicked, the righteous, they're no different than the beast. And he's bringing it all into perspective. When you're looking at life from this perspective, our end is the same. Good, bad, animals, man, we all return to the dust. That's answering the question of life right here from this earthly perspective. We breathe the same air, we end up at the same end. There's going to be a time when we won't be here. And that helps us to understand and appreciate God's sovereignty. That God's plan is bigger than you and me, and that God's will be accomplished, even if it takes a lot longer than you and me. And resting satisfied that he's going to right the wrongs. And he has given us work to do right now, and to stay busy, and to stay focused, and continue to serve him. And he's not removed our responsibility, but that he is ultimately in control. And this, for us, provides us security in knowing that my life is in his hand. Which leads us now to verses 21 and 22 as we find our focus recovered. Solomon writes, who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works. For that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? The problem with our work, and that problem of legacy, and that problem of contentment, is that sometimes we spend our efforts working so hard to control circumstances that are way beyond our control. Remember, God's sovereign. He's in control. The problems that we have trying to control circumstances that are beyond our control, if you right now were to try to distill the great struggles in your life, moment by moment, day by day, it's going to break down into either something that happened in the past or something that you're worried about tomorrow. We spend our time trying to reclaim something that we lost in the past, something that we once had. For some of us, it's youthfulness. It hurts to bend down sometimes in the morning to put your shoes on. And you think to yourself, I wished I had that. I wished I spent more time bent over. Maybe that's the problem. If we spent more time bending over when we were younger, we wouldn't have a problem bending over when we're older. When I think about the problems that I have or the struggles that I have, a lot of times my mind goes back to what I used to have and I don't have now. And I let what I used to have rob me of the happiness right now. Because I think to myself, it was a happier, simpler time. I was young. I didn't have any responsibilities. Didn't have to worry about what I was going to eat. Didn't have to worry about what I was going to wear because there was somebody that dressed me and took care of me and did that for me. Well, there is still somebody that does all that for me now. But I think about all the problems that we have, and it can fall in this category of we get so worked up about what we used to have, we don't have anymore. Or we worry about losing that object in the future. That's what worry is. I don't know how the outcome's going to go, and I'm just going to let myself go. And I want you to know, as people, we are hardwired for worry. When there is something beyond our control and something that we don't have the answer for, that does cause us great alarm. And you know what? I want you to know, I'm up there with you. I'm chief of worriers. Worrying about the future. But when we let the past rob us of happiness in the moment, or we let the future rob us of contentment right now, we miss out on the present happiness because of our past losses or our future gains. There are just too many questions left unanswered from this earthbound perspective if this is all there is, life under the sun. Solomon has sat and he's thought long and hard about it, far more than you and I could ever hope to try to spend our time and our effort. God gave him great wisdom, and his conclusion is this: be happy with the task that you have. Enjoy life. But another injustice that we have is when we fail to recognize what God has blessed us with. Remember, we talked about injustice from our perspective. It's something that someone has done against us. But injustice has always been an assault against God's plan and God's desire. When you think about the injustices that take place between one person and another person on this planet, God, through Israel, demonstrated his desire and his love for the stranger, for the widow, for the orphan. And he told the children of Israel, you need to make provisions. You need to take care of these people that are often neglected. And yet today, we live in a world where injustice rules. And we fail to do anything about it. Sometimes we do spend a lot of time working towards it. But you know what's a great injustice? Losing sight of all that God has blessed us with. Psalm 49, verses 15 through 20 as we close. David tells us, but God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave. Who knows whether our soul goes up or the animal goes down to the dust? David says, but my God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall receive me. There's your answer, Solomon. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. Though while he lived, he blessed his soul, and men will praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. He shall go to the generation of his fathers, and they shall never see light. Man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beasts that perish. Something that David wrestled with. And he wants us to understand the problem is our perspective. We think about injustice in terms of blessing. It's unjust that someone else has something that I should have. It's unjust that someone doesn't have what another has. But when we pull back and understand in terms of God's righteousness, in terms of God's plan, injustice is when the wicked assault that plan and work against that plan. But the day is coming when our Lord is going to return, and he's going to establish his kingdom, and this world is going to know what it's been looking for so long. And it's going to be because our King is here and ruling and reigning. Paul tells us that there's coming that day when every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. May our focus be restored this morning. Our point is this: life under the sun experiences satisfied life when I take comfort in God's work to accomplish his purpose, and when I stay busy doing the work that he's called me to do. So here's our response this morning as we close. My life discovers a redeemed satisfaction when I am contented with my God-given work. Don't stop working. Keep working. Keep serving. May you and I find our satisfaction with his sovereignty. Not that it removes from us our responsibility of serving him, but learning to say, you know what, God, there are circumstances beyond my control, and I'm going to trust you to deal with that. Help me, Lord, to stay focused on what I can do. Help me, Lord, to see the work that I need to stay focused in and do the work that you've called me to do, because I don't have the strength to change circumstances that are beyond my control. So, Lord, please, take my work, and may it be a gift for your glory. May I give it back to you in your name. May I not serve my own legacy, but I serve your name. That's how our happiness becomes a present reality, when we can let go of the perspective that this world revolves around us and rejoice that it revolves around him, that he controls and I serve him. And that's when our work becomes enough, because it's a work, it's a gift to his glory. And that what I set my hand to do, I do so for his sake, and I do so for his legacy. And the impact that I leave on this earth may never, ever, ever have any, it may never, ever see light of day. No one may never, ever know all that I have done, but God does. And I want my life to be about people knowing his name rather than my own. So our prayer this morning is this: Lord, grant me the character to handle life moment by moment, for your glory and not my own.